Well, quite a bit of paddling went on beneath the waterline, and I've already done one show this afternoon, but here we are with a brand new title for the first of the 2017 Suzy Radio Evening Cricket Chat Shows. Welcome along to On the Front Foot. We thought we'd give the title to the batsman this year, you see. Hello, good evening. My name's David Jay. I'll be introducing you fairly shortly to my colleague Tim Bowling, who's sharing the presentation of the show again this year. We've got a third colleague with us in the studio tonight, because it's the one chance that Chris Jacobs has to join in with On the Front Foot before he heads off for something very exciting for a few months, and we'll be chatting to him about that later on. And I'm very pleased to say as well that as our club guest this time around, we've got one of our guests from the final season wrap-up of 2016, and Nav Saeed, the skipper of Merstham, is back with us. He'll be reflecting on a slightly different start to this season from the one to 2016. Anyway, that's us. That's what it's all about. And in short, the boys are back in town. Indeed, the boys are back in town again for On the Front Foot, brand new title for the show. Tim, hello, good evening.
Good evening, David, how are you?
It's very nice to see you, and I'm okay, all things considered. I've been rushing around just a little bit today. You got lots for us?
Yes, indeed. We've brought the cricket weather with us, I see. We've got nice amount of rain outside today to start the season of the shows for us. But we've got a few items to look at later on. We've got Nav here to talk about Merstham Cricket Club, so hopefully we're going to have another good season of shows.
Well, let's hope so indeed, and I think without more ado, since I postponed them from this afternoon, it's worth doing the local cricket results, eh?
Yeah, I think so, yep. Susie.
Outward, first 11, beat Flimwell to secure their third win on the trot. Stuart Currell scored 55 not out, and Matt Norman conceded just 10 runs in 8 overs with 2 wickets to his credit. The second 11 took on Farningham, were set 2-4-2 to win, and a great batting effort took them to just 19 short on 2-2-4, with Guy Bignall scoring 55. The Sunday 11 played the RNBR and set 2-24 to win, were all out for 158, Matt Norman top scoring with 55, and the Miller men travelled to Bolney, were put into bat and scored 174, Si Knight 45, whereupon Bolney chased them down with 10 overs to spare and 10 wickets in hand. Outward women's 8 played South Nutfield in pouring rain, scoring 58 in 10 overs, which South Nutfield overhauled in 8 overs. At Chobham on Saturday in Surrey County League Division 2, Hawley Firsts tottered from 78 to 1 to 98 for 6 in 6 overs, following 52 for the first wicket from Josh Mason and Brad Bosman. Anthony Puttick's patient 46 alongside Jordan Robbins restored some order, and from 184 for 9, the evergreen Trevor Stevens shared with Robbins 49 for the last wicket. Stevens batting 25 minutes without scoring before Roberts was out for 68. Chobham powered to 153 for the first wicket, but Hawley struck 3 times more before going down by 6 wickets with 15 balls remaining. At Hawley Row, bottom of the table Farncombe never got going against Hawley 2, struggled to 148 all out. Hawley newcomer Tom Livermore took 4 for 22 on debut. Danny Razak, 73 not out, and brother Adam, 48 not out, added an unbroken 102 to see Hawley to the 20 points. Hawley under 10s made it 5 wins in a row, beating Salfords by 44 runs. The under 13s picked up their second league win in a week, beating Capel with plenty of time to spare following a crushing victory at Woodmansterne, and Hawley under 11s beat South Nutfield. Newdigate Firsts were at home to Mitcham Surrey County League in the Surrey County League and chased down Mitcham's 201 for 9 in 38 overs with 52 not out for Australian overseas player Cody Irvin. There was 50 not out for Steve Cale and 49 for Tom Collard. The twos went down by 16 runs at Frimley, who made 181 for 5. Newdigate were 165 all out with a valiant not out 47 from the evergreen Andy Meads. So, gentlemen, here we are after all that, and there are one or two more results to come, including Merstham's. Nav Saeed, skipper of Merstham, it's lovely to have you here again.
It's great to be here, Dave. Thanks for having us,
me here today. And it's been rather a different start to the season from the one that you might have anticipated.
After three consecutive league winners, bit of a disappointing start for the season this year. Out of five games, we've only managed to win one so far, which is a bit disappointing. It's a new league, new division.
Which division are you in now?
We're now Division 5 of the Surrey Championship. So we came up from the Fullers League having won it last year. But unfortunately this season we've lost a few players.
Yeah, always a struggle. Have you found that league a big step up, do you think?
I don't think it's a big step up. I think the standards are very similar. But obviously having lost a few of our top players to the big fish... to the Banstead, to the Old Wits of this world. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to compete as well as we thought we would.
How's the spirit holding up now at Merstham?
It's not too bad. We're still positive. We still believe in our abilities. I'm telling the guys to still play positively, play positive cricket. Still go out there and play your shots. Previously, I did mention in our previous talk show that we have a predominantly sort of a mixed. Pakistani players, few Indian players who like to play their cricket in an aggressive manner and a positive manner, and I'd like to continue that way. We're going to try to fight our way out of this bit of a difficult period that we have at the moment.
I'm sure you'll get out of it. It's always tough when you've gone up to a new division. It's always tough starting off a new season, especially if you don't get the start you want. But I'm sure, as you say, if the players are going to start playing positive or keep playing positively, then hopefully things should come together.
Well, we played the top side on Saturday, just gone, against Hazelmere. And we bowled really well. We bowled them out for 144. And we should have got that in 52 overs, which is what we were going to get back. Unfortunately, we just fell, I think, 24 runs short.
Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it?
It was, yeah. It was so close. One of our guys did get a 50, but nobody else batted around him. So it's not the bowling that's is letting us down. At the moment, it's our batting that's letting us down. Mm. So we'll get it together. I know I've got faith. Maybe the championship's not in our sight this season, but if we consolidate, trying to finish mid-table this season, and then recruit or trying to push them young colts through for next season, and then we'll do a title push for next season. That's the plan.
Now, have you noticed a difference in the standard of the grounds that you're playing on?
Definitely. Hazelmere, it's almost Hampshire, I think. Hazelmere has a lovely ground. Definitely, the standards are better. The grounds are better as well. A lot of grounds in the Charity Championship have covered wickets, which make a huge difference in the standard of cricket that you play in. The pitches are a lot better. It should be technically better for batters. Unfortunately, we haven't been batting very well. But yeah, definitely the pitches and the grounds are much better in this division.
You mentioned covered wickets. It was very noticeable the first week that there was a drop of rain around, that it wasn't just county scores that went down the tubes. The club scores were halved, more or less.
Yes, they were. Yeah, very much so.
And one of the things that I've no doubt we'll be talking about when Chris Jacobs joins us later, and I know Tim has got some views about this, is that across the board we're starting to see a bit of a decline in the lower 11s in second, third, fourth 11 cricket. Now, Outward, for the first time this week, for a number of weeks, managed to get their twos on the field. Yep. And I know, as I say, that we'll be chatting to Leatherhead later on, but twos, threes and fours at Merstham all going strong now.
Very strong, yeah. We managed to get 44 players out each week. I mean, the odd weeks we've had a few struggles because obviously the young university boys and the college and the school kids are still busy. But we still managed to get 44.
Is the fourth 11 in? Is that playing a league or is it friendly?
It is. No, it's all league. Four teams are playing in league cricket. So they all play a decent standard of cricket. Yeah. All Surrey Championship. All four sides at Merstham are in the championship. So I think they have now regionalised the 4th 11 now, which makes a big difference, where guys don't have to travel as much distance, especially having young colts and trying to get these youngsters to different grounds. It's quite difficult for parents and for the fellow players.
We were talking about it before the show, and we were discussing the fact that, you know, it's vital for clubs like Merstham and all local clubs to have a vibrant 4th 11, 3rd 11 to try and bring the colts through.
Yeah, there's all different standards of cricketers. So I'm a big believer that everybody should be playing some sort of cricket. Yeah. So they'll fit in according to whatever standards they want to play in. And said, we've got four 11s, and we're trying to fit every single player into the.
Do you still have your focus on bringing Colts through and trying to get them up to
definitely,
the higher teams?
Definitely. What we've tried to do at Merstham is trying to get the third 11 predominantly have young players in there. So the fourth 11 is much of a social league side, with the sort of the ex first or second 11 players want to just go and play together as a social side, and we've predominantly used the third 11 to breed our younger Colts.
Yep.
So when they're ready, then we can then start pushing them in the second and the first 11. That is the program that we run at Merstham.
I've been watching Burgess Hill again a fair bit this season, and this is in the Sussex Cricket League Division 3. A friend of mine has been called back. Poor chap, he's only been married 18 months and he's been called back to be skipper, having done the job for a number of years in his 20s. Mm. And Burgess Hill led Div 3 in Sussex last year from the first day to the last, and on the last day of the season they were 59 for 2, chasing 118 for promotion, got bowled out and didn't even get promoted.
Shame.
And the effect that has had, both on spirit and player participation, is absolutely extraordinary. I think that Mike Trowbridge, the chairman, will be coming in later in the season to talk to us about that. But it's interesting that having fallen at that hurdle, the spirit was as if somebody had just stuck a pin in a balloon, and they are now very much at the bottom of Division 3. Talking about better grounds to play on now, it's interesting that in Sussex they've switched to the Surrey Championship model, half and half, 50 overs and declaration games, and they have put five of the top side's second 11s into Division 3, with five extant first 11s. The net result of all that is that Burgess Hill are anchored to the bottom, having led the division from start to finish last year. We mentioned Outward Women. Women's cricket at Merstham at the moment?
It's not at the moment. We don't have as much women cricketers, but we are trying to get that market, trying to get more women cricketers playing. I think there's a few girls in the Colts teams I've seen running around. So we are trying to develop the women's side of it. It's something that Richard Feast is doing a great job. Almost 200 Colts at Merstham, with a lot of females in that group as well. So we are trying to develop the women's cricket at Merstham Cricket Club, yes.
I think it's good for clubs to do that. And as you say, it's the right way to do it, to bring in girls playing in Colts cricket, to bring them through that way. And then, you know, if they can play in their own sides, great. If they can, you know, if they're good enough to play in men's sides, then so be it.
Eventually. I mean, my daughter's 9 years old, and I'm trying to push her to play cricket, which is something I want to do.
She enjoys
it very much, yeah. She gets in the back garden with my son as well. The three of us are in the backyard throwing the ball around. So hopefully, it's a way of taking them away from the PlayStations and the Xboxes
and
iPads, and get them out there and playing sports. I mean, if it's cricket, if it's tennis, if it's even football and things like that, it's good that they're out there and playing these sports.
It seems to me, partly from my previous existence, that the big challenge with women's cricket is the transition from girl under 13 Colts to adult women playing the game. That's where the stumbling block seems to come. And, you know, let's hope that we can overcome. I suppose if Outward and South Nutfield are willing to play eight-a-side in the pouring rain, it's got to be worth something. We mentioned grounds, Nav. What about the umpiring situation in Division 5? How does that work?
It's still home umpires, so the home team, also each team will provide its own umpires at the moment. I think it's up to from Division 3 onwards that you actually have neutral umpires, whereas in the Division 4 and 5 you still have to have your own umpire supplied. Yeah. Unfortunately, they're a bit scarce at the moment, umpires. We're struggling to get one. I mean, I've got Dave Loader, who's been at the club for many years, over 50 years, and unfortunately he's now in his sort of late 70s, and to be honest, it's hard to find umpires who spend the whole day doing that. So if there's anybody out there, please give Merstham Cricket Club a call.
It's amazing what a difference it makes, though, to the players as well, when they know there's an umpire there, because there's not many players that fancy going out and umpiring when they're having to play. And I remember that when I've been playing, we used to have an umpire, an older guy, unfortunately he's no longer with us, but he used to turn out an umpire week in, week out, and it made a huge difference to the we talked about spirit of cricket earlier, to everybody's sort of morale, the fact that they knew they could concentrate on playing.
Playing, yeah.
They didn't have to worry about, I've got to go and umpire for... Because you know what it's like, someone goes out to umpire, they're invariably they're stuck out there for 30 overs or something before anybody else will volunteer to go out and relieve them. So it does make a massive difference.
That's one easy thing that a captain doesn't have to organise. So you know your umpire. I mean, at Merston, we've got, I mean, the recent pavilion that's just been opened, we've actually got an umpire's room, a shower, and actually he's got his own sort of private area, which you can. So it's separate away from the playing members. So we've got a good little setup at Merston with the individual changing room areas for umpires.
Have you had lots of do you get lots of new members each year joining? I mean, do you have an active recruitment campaign?
I do, yeah. I mean, this whole new thing, I think it's all brought up from football, is recruitment is the new word now at the moment. But my recruitment's done in the winter. My team building, everything is done in winter time when I'm introducing people at Nets, trying to give them a bat, trying to give them a ball, see what they're like, trying to get them fitted in, getting to know other players. And I'm not. I don't just recruit from the first or the second 11. It's recruitment across the board.
Yeah.
So including the third and fourth 11, they're just as important as the first and second
so
teams.
So are you using sort of social media, advertising, anything like that, or is just word of mouth?
Word of mouth. Friends of friends. And there's people who've just moved in the area. They'll email us or they will contact Richard or myself on Facebook and Twitter and so forth. And from there, we just basically tend. Nets is on a Sunday, come between this time, and then we just basically make them feel welcome, and that's how you do it. That's the best way to do it. And then we try to get them introduced and let them know what Merston Cricket's all about, and the social side and the barbecues and the bar and everything like that, which is all part of it, which people enjoy doing.
And the social scene flourishing at Quality Street, Nav?
It is at the moment. Yeah, we've had a few lock-ins. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but yeah, we had a few lock-ins in the bar. The pool table is still getting used. In the pre-season, just to get everybody involved, my wife did a curry sort of after the game, a curry evening. So we did that as well. So that was good fun. But yeah, we just try to have a social game before the season. Yeah. And then what we try to do is once a month is have a barbecue. So we get all the members together, because sometimes a first 11 member wants a fourth 11 member or a third 11 member, because
different grounds
and people tend to go home after games. So what we try to do is once a month we'll get everybody together and have a barbecue, and it's a way of making funds for the club as well.
It raises funds and it does make a massive difference to the whole spirit of the club when people feel that they're drawn in, just even if they're not playing many games, and the fact that they feel there's a social scene that they
certainly
can participate in, it does make a massive difference.
Nav, I think it's time we probably took a breather, and I'll spare your blushes. I don't mean that unkindly, but the four results that Ian sent me from Merston this week make slightly grisly reading. So I'll leave those now till the second hour of the show, after you're safely on your way home.
Okay.
What we will do is ask you to turn your spotlight on the wider cricket field. But we're going to have a little bit of music now, and this is from Surrey's very own Mark Butcher. Surrey County Cricket Club and Sky TV's very own Mark Butcher. Fine man. He played Colts cricket against my lot when I was at the grammar school all those years ago. Left Trinity at an early stage to pursue the pro game, following in his dad's footsteps. Put Some Soul in It. A fine song too. Nav, we've had Champions Trophy again today, and I think the rain interfered, but it didn't prevent an England win, Tim.
That's right. England were chasing... England set 310 today for New Zealand, who ended up being bowled out for 223. It was rather windy there today. England booked their place in the semi-final with that victory. They've won two out of two now. Good game, I think, today. I managed to catch bits of it. It looked like England were pretty much on form, other than unfortunately Jason Roy had a bit of a stinker again, but the rest of the team seemed to perform pretty well. Bowling wise, they performed very well, but I think England looked pretty good, so hopefully they might be able to progress and maybe get a bit of success for a first time in 50 over cricket.
Let's spare Chris Jacobs this one item of the wider discussion that we're going to have later. What do you think, Tim, Nav? What do you think about our local man, after all, our local man Jason Roy's position?
He's under pressure at the moment, isn't he? I mean, got Johnny Bairstow sort of breathing down his neck at the moment, trying to take his place. So I want Jason to do well, because he's a local lad. It's proud to see some young players coming through obviously Surrey. I'm hoping next innings he gets another opportunity.
I think he'd be unlucky to be dropped now. I think Owen Morgan has made the point that he's going to stick with him.
Yeah.
I think the problem is with Roy is that when Roy performs, Hales doesn't perform. When Hales performs, Roy tends to not perform. And they don't ever seem to sort of both perform together.
Very similar players, aren't they, both of them?
I mean, the first match in the Champions Trophy, Roy got out to trying to play a ramp shot, which I guess that's just a little bit of lack of confidence. He tried to play the shot. He hadn't realised there was a fielder standing literally where he was putting the ball. Today, played all round it, got bowled. So I think Owen Morgan will stick with him. But as you say, with Bairstow breathing down his neck, if he doesn't perform in the semi-final and we still go through, then there's going to be a question mark as to whether Bairstow comes in for the final.
But with this new England set-up now, I think they will stick with the same team and be consistent, not chop and change and like the old days in the 90s and before that.
Well, that was the problem, wasn't it?
There
were so many changes to the England team. Players would come in, not get a full chance. At least Roy is getting a full chance to prove himself, which, you know, he's only, I think, once he starts scoring runs again, like we all know in cricket, once you start scoring runs and you get that sort of confidence.
It's just one knock away from being back in form.
That's right. And I think in fairness to Jason, you know, who as a young player locally was, pretty single-minded and extremely self-confident. He's done his bit. You know, he brought that side back to play at Reigate Priory in their cricket week last summer. And once that sort of thing is going on, I think those kinds of links between the pro game and certainly the top of the club game are really important. So, Nav, obviously, as a working man, and we're pleased that you are in work, how much opportunity realistically do you get to see much from this Champions Trophy and cricket in general on TV?
It is quite difficult because obviously most of the games are during the week, but I did watch my beloved Pakistan play on Sunday. Obviously, maybe my parents were born in Pakistan and came here in the 60s and the 70s, and I'm now second to third generation. I still have an affiliation to Pakistan cricket. Having the local rivals for us, India, actually giving us a hammering, was a bit embarrassing. But at the moment, India are a very good side. They've got some top batsmen with Kohli and Yuvraj and Dhoni and people like that. It's absolutely a good team to watch. Pakistan a bit way behind. They don't have the talent coming through.
Am I right that Mickey Arthur's looking after Pakistan?
They are, yes. He's currently coaching.
And I think he said, you know, that it really was a matter of basics.
It is, yeah.
And I suspect we also see the immense strength of Misbah-ul Haq in recent years as a leader.
As a leader, as a very good captain, yeah. He set the example, not just as a top-quality batsman as well. He was also a very good leader and took Pakistan cricket forward.
And, of course, Yunus has gone at the same time.
Yunus has gone as well. I mean, he hasn't played one-day cricket as much in recent years, but certainly in the Test arena, those two would be a huge loss.
It's a little bit like Walsh and Ambrose suddenly leaving that unpluggable gap in West Indies resources. But let's hope, heavens above, people take views about sides from the subcontinent, don't they? And nothing better to me in the wake of the events in London at the weekend than to see Pakistan and India enjoying themselves at Edgbaston. Certainly. And that wonderful Bangladeshi crowd yesterday, they may have been saved by the rain. But, you know, Pakistan have had an awful lot to put up with, not just people taking positions but having to play in the Emirates and no opportunity to play at home, and I'm sure that, like West Indies, we all hope that they really will come again.
Certainly do. A good Pakistan side, the way they play cricket, the way they play aggressive and flair cricket, it's good to watch. So just like the West Indies, we need a strong Pakistan side. It may take a few years to redevelop them, trying to get those players to a certain level, but I think they will, and they've got enough pool of talent, enough people playing cricket in Pakistan to come through and have a strong side over the next few years.
The leg spinner's a good bowler, and he plays cricket with a smile on his face.
He does,
as well.
Shadab, the new guy, yes. Yeah. He's a very good, he's been very successful last year or so. They're hoping to develop him further, and I think he'd be a very good test player in the next few years. He's still developing in a one-day game, but on the test arena, he's been quite successful.
Well, as I say, let's hope that the only way is up for Pakistan. Now, England, having beaten New Zealand, are qualified, presumably.
We're in the semi-final now, so I think if Australia we play Australia on Saturday, so if Australia beat England on Saturday, I think Australia qualify from our group as well. Just looking at the tables at the moment, in Group B, India joint top with South Africa at the moment, with Sri Lanka and Pakistan yet to score points, but obviously still only one game, so you know, hopefully
we've got an opportunity.
Hopefully Pakistan can sort of pull something back and maybe sort of try and look for that sort of second spot. But
certainly,
you know, as you said, it's going to be a bit tough. But it'd be good to see the likes of Pakistan. And I mean, we're missing West Indies from the Champions Trophy,
which is a shame. Yeah,
which is, I think, is awful, really. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's based on the top eight teams in the world.
Yes.
Obviously, Bangladesh and I think Pakistan qualified. I think you qualified eighth, didn't
you? Eighth, yeah, because they beat West Indies in West Indies in the one-day series, and that's why they qualified in the eighth position.
Yeah,
and it's good to see Bangladesh doing very well.
Yeah.
It's good to see another nation coming forward.
And they're an exciting team to watch,
aren't they? Very good, yeah. Tamim Iqbal. Yeah.
He enjoys his English conditions, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
He plays a short ball well, which is good to see.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, England fairly well banana skinned it in Bangladesh in the winter, did they not?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think unfortunately there was maybe a little bit of overconfidence there, likewise when we last played New Zealand in the World Cup, there was an overconfidence and we got absolutely slaughtered. Now today you look at how England played and it's a totally different mentality, which makes a big difference when you're playing these sort of games. And you know, we spoke earlier about the fact that obviously New Zealand are missing players like McCullum, but you still need to beat the team that's in front of you. And England obviously did that. They put together a very good bowling performance today. They all batted well, bar Roy, but as I say, hopefully he'll come good. Mm. So for England, it looks good. But then. Yeah. England have been in these positions before in 50 over cricket.
Yeah. But there's an air of confidence about England at the moment. Yeah. So they just look confident, consistently scoring over 300 runs in each game.
I think I saw the stat that England have scored something like 20 odd times over 300 since the World Cup.
Since the World Cup, yeah. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
But yet again, it's that brand of cricket of playing positive cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
Gentlemen, before we have to bid Nav goodbye, because 40 minutes flies when we're enjoying ourselves, two burning questions from the chair, and the first is a bit loaded. Was either of you particularly sorry for Australia when the rain came down at the Oval last night?
Certainly not, no.
I did say to you earlier I felt a bit sorry for them, but, you know, as it's the Aussies, then maybe not so sorry.
No.
Perhaps it's fair to surmise that if the two games had been played out, Australia would have had 2 points just the same, because it looked as if New Zealand were on the way, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Australia have still got a chance on Saturday against us, and if we maybe taken our eye off the ball slightly with the fact that we've already qualified, then the Aussies may get a result there and go through.
I'd like to see England beat Australia and push them out of the top four, and then they've got a better chance of winning this.
Definitely,
because you don't want to play Australia in the final.
No.
So.
Absolutely, you don't. That's when they're at their most dangerous. Tim, you got a prediction at this stage?
I have to say, I'd like to say that I think England's going to win, but I have a sneaking suspicion it might be India.
Nav?
I'm going to go for England win.
Yeah, good lad.
I'm going to say, I want England to win as well.
Yeah.
It's about time they did that.
Yeah.
Nav Saeed, skipper of Merstham Cricket Club, thank you so much for coming in to be our guest yet again this evening on the first edition of the show for this year. And we very sincerely wish you and the club lots of success on the field as the rest of the season unfolds. And will you come back and see us for the season
wrap-up? Definitely, David. Thanks for having me here today. And it's good to talk about cricket with you guys.
It's been a great pleasure. And we've talked so much that I'm not even going to do a track into the ad break. We're going to take the ad break straight away. Nav, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, David. Thanks a lot, Tim. Thank you.
Well, believe it or not, that's Graham Swan and his band doing Lynyrd Skynyrd's Sweet Home Alabama. Welcome back to On the Front Foot, our cricket chat show here at Suzy 103.4. We're all pedalling furiously below the waterline, and it's time to say a very good evening to my colleague, our lunchtime presenter, Chris Jacobs. Chris, hello.
Evening, fellas. How are we both doing?
We're doing all right, I think. Tim, yeah?
Yep, good. Yep, very good.
Now, Chris, you are here partly because it's your one opportunity to do it this season, and also because you're a cricket coach. Tell us about the coaching.
The coaching side, it's very profitable, in particular when you see a lot of potential, because around going from different club to club, because I've coached at Epsom, which I'm doing at the present time, Leatherhead, the likes of Hampton Wick previously, there are a lot of players around that have the potential, but do they have the mentality? Because a lot of the time with these kids, it's just football, football, football. Wait a second. Oh, I have to play 40 overs on a Saturday. No, I'd rather sit home and play my Xbox. That, honestly, that's the frustration. Because if you can get the mentality right, because I've got a couple of players that I've coached whose mentality is spot on. Their quality might not be up there, because I've got one young player who I've coached about 6 months to a year now. He's about 11, but he's about 3 foot tall, and he is as skinny as can be. But his temperament and the way he bats is incredible. We did a net session. Basically, if you get out, you're out. This guy batted for an hour and a half, just there, leaving the ball outside off, just leaving it outside leg, and just anything on the stumps, just prod forward, block it, just knock it down quite softly. Incredible player. But it's just, you need more kids like that, because there's so many around that are just seeing, right, cow corner to about mid-off, say, right, I'm going to hit it over there because I want to see the ball fly over the pavilion.
Do you find the children, the Colts, are receptive to what you have to say as a coach?
It can be a mixed bag, because there's a lot of different mentalities from these players, because some of them will just muck about and just won't do the things you say, but some of them, a majority of them to be fair, do in fact take on the advice, and it is so profitable when you see these guys, when you do like camps and you do like whole days, and they've listened to you in the nets in the morning and they're actually putting it into practice in the afternoon. So you say, maybe I played a game with one of these kids against a couple of, where were they from? Polish lads, a couple of last year. And basically, mid-game, I was just like, he opened the batting and he was struggling to get the ball away because they were pitching on a good length every time. I was like, why don't you take maybe a step outside your crease and create that into full length? So he was on about maybe single score for about 20 balls. Surely he'd got up to about a run a ball within about 10 balls later, because he just made that subtle adjustment just to move the ball and manipulate the ball and make it a lot easier for himself. Which, when you say them take this information on and then put it into practice, it's just really, really good for them.
Going back to Outward, and when we were talking to Nav about that step between girls' cricket, Colts style, and women playing cricket, do you think, Chris, that when somebody is 3 foot small at the age of 11, the biggest stepping stone of all is acquiring the ability to hit it off the square?
Very much so. Very much so. There's a lot of players that I've come across that they do struggle with that. They do struggle with that. I've even got a guy who's my height, and I'm only 5 foot six, and he plays in the threes 11 with me, and he struggles to hit it off the square. That is a very much problem. Although you can say, get in the gym, but it's like, it's the wrong way to go about it.
I don't think you can get in the gym at 11.
At 13.
No, that's not really going to work. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Anyway, it's fascinating that you are so committed to your coaching, as well as being a consummate lunchtime presenter. Now, you've got a very exciting opportunity coming up before we turn to your cricket and Tim's, before we get to the news at the top of the hour. So tell us about this very exciting initiative, Chris, you're about to undertake.
Yes, I'm going to America for 3 months at the end of this month, 23rd of June, I think, a flight. I'm going to do Camp America. So I'm doing all the summer camps over there. So it's just basically what I've done cricket coaching in the summers, but I'll just do more sports and just staying with the kids and just keeping them all influenced. It's basically, as you see on all these summer movies, obviously not the same, but you stay with them, you do all loads of activities with them, and I just thought, why not? Let's just do it. Let's just try it out and go.
Is that something you want to do sort of going forward, sort of coaching and training sports for kids and stuff once you finish Camp America?
It is a little bit. I'd love to keep going down, trying to do both, like the radio presenting as much as the coaching, just alongside and side by side, because the coaching side, there's so many pluses you can get out of it in terms of seeing a player progress through and through. Obviously, David's seen Jason Roy progress from when he was at Reigate Priory. So if you could see a player push on, because there's plenty of players I know who are trying to trial for Middlesex this year, or they're playing for like Hounslow Borough. So it'd be good to see someone that you've had a little bit of input in, and then hopefully push forward. But it's definitely in. I'm always going to help out if I can at any potential opportunity with coaching.
So how long did you say you're going for? 3 months?
3 months, yeah. Back end of September, beginning of October, I think I'm coming back. Yeah, a little bit travelling in the Zora as well, because you have to be done that.
Exactly.
Has to be
exactly.
done.
Just to follow up on something that you said, Chris, of course, I had 25 years very directly watching players develop from under-12s to first 11 on a decent schools circuit with a reasonable standard. And it's fascinating how sometimes it's all a little bit Bob Dylan, the last shall be first and the first shall be last. There was a lad who I never really coached. I left the coaching to the coaches. I did the management and the organisation and in latter years umpiring. But there was a lad called Rob Lowe who played for us and played at Epsom throughout. Now, Lowe was an under 14, under 15 B and finished up scoring 600 first team runs in his final season.
Yeah,
so
he keeps for the twos now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's amazing how these threads run through. The world of local cricket is a very small one. Now, talking about Epsom and indeed about Leatherhead, I'm going to leave it to you guys for the next 5 minutes. How are things in the two clubs, particularly reference to this decline in the lower 11s?
Well, and then off you go, Tim.
Well, it pains me to say it, really, but unfortunately at Leatherhead we've struggled a little bit at the start of the season, which can sometimes happen, to get player availability. And as a result, we've had to sort of withdraw the third 11 from the league. The rules are such that because we've got first and seconds in the Surrey Championship as well, having conceded two, our first two games of the season, if you concede three games, as you know, you can end up affecting the points and the positions of the teams above you. So unfortunately, the decision was made to withdraw from the league this year to sort of consolidate and hopefully next year try and come back a bit stronger and so forth. But I don't know what it's like at Epsom, but certainly at Leatherhead it's been tough this season to try and actually get proper sort of full teams out, certainly for down at the sort of lower end of the threes where I play. Mm. I don't know whether that's just a sort of modern thing that people don't want to commit to all day cricket anymore or what it is, but I don't know whether it's any different at Epsom.
That's partially it. People don't want to commit to full day cricket anymore. I've had many conversations, maybe even over the last 2 weeks, of people would actually prefer to play rather than ones, twos, threes, fours, division 40 over games, one, two, three, fours, 20-20 games, yeah. 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon. You're in, you're out, you get there by one, home by 4, 5 o'clock, yeah, and you're done, and then you can get the social on, because that's what most people want. Because there's plenty of times when you've got a team put on 300-400 on the board off 45 overs. You've got no chance. You're batting, and you're about 45 for six, and everyone's like, let's just get the social started. Can we get on the beers yet?
Yeah.
That's a lot of the mentality with some of these teams. But in terms of availability, normally it's a struggle at this time, but we've had no problems at all. Mm. We've regularly got outside of ones, twos, threes and fours. Even last weekend, which is notoriously known for Epsom, Derby weekend, nobody is available. But we still managed to get out four sides to play, and it was our best weekend. We won three out of four games and got a losing draw against Guildford for the twos. Considering the ones, twos and threes had lost every single game before that, it was a pretty good result.
Presumably your team changes quite a bit once you get sort of university, the sort of university lads coming back?
Yes, they do. They're coming back in the next couple of weeks. We've got a few coming back, but surprisingly, there's not as many people at university that actually come back. Yeah. There's only maybe two or three that can spring straight off the top of my head that would go in and will play Saturday cricket, because really, they once they go to university, they're just like, they just don't really want to enjoy it, go and play anymore.
Presumably the cult section at Epsom is a pretty vibrant section.
Massive.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is at Leatherhead, there's a big cult section. It's a successful cults group. And, you know, everybody works really hard and they bring the kids through and put a lot of time and effort in. You know, and it's just frustrating that obviously kids play for their schools, they're doing other things, to get that leap from colts into adult cricket, because it makes a massive difference for colts when they're playing adult cricket. I mean, the current first 11 captain of Leatherhead, I remember playing with him in the third 11 10 years or so ago, when he was obviously just a colt himself. But I'm sure that the fact that he was playing adult cricket at an early age helped develop his whole sort of attitude towards cricket and how adult cricket is played, because it's a huge difference playing adult cricket to colts cricket.
Oh, definitely. There has been a steady decline, but I still think the best way to bring these kids through is that you've only got to have two or three of them in a team at a time, because I think a lot of chairmen around local cricket clubs, they want to see the youngsters go through, and everyone wants to see the youngsters go through and come into senior cricket. But the problem is you can't have a team full of 6 to 7 players of under-13s, under-14s. That won't help them a bit. That'll just hinder them.
I think the other problem sometimes is that if Colts are performing, they might play for a 4th or 3rd 11. If they then get called up to the 2nd 11, and all of a sudden they're batting at 11, not bowling, they're disinclined to want to play. I know of clubs where Colts really don't want to play higher than the threes, because they know in the threes they're going to get a proper bowl, they're going to bat high up, and they're going to be involved in the game. As soon as they start getting pushed up to the seconds and even first sometimes, they're just not utilised, and it can be quite bad for them if that happens.
It's all very interesting, isn't it? I asked Nav, so I'll ask both of you, gentlemen, how's the social scene in both your clubs?
Well, Leatherhead, it's great. I mean, you know, we've got great clubhouse, great social scene. Nav mentioned that Mersham have barbecues, regular barbecues at Leatherhead. And it's a very, very social club, a really good club to get involved with. So anybody that's in the Leatherhead area that's listening online, whatever, fancies a game, fancies coming down, be made most welcome at Leatherhead.
Same with Epsom, to be fair. I think the main night normally is Friday nights, because it's the main, like, the young kids' Colts night, so all their parents come down and they go, oh, it's a social, they got a barbecue going. As bonus for us coaches, we get free burgers. But, to be fair, it is a very sociable club. It always has been. But I think the struggle with the social side at the beginning of the season is probably because we've lost most games.
Yeah.
And people, after you lose, you don't want to come back to the club and start talking to people. But in the overall sense, it's always been, the social side has always been pretty good, to be fair.
Very short answers, gentlemen, please. The divisions in which your two clubs' first 11s play.
The first 11 plays in Division 1 of the Surrey Championship.
Surrey Championship Div 2.
So that really is a pretty reasonable standard, and I would imagine that the standard in the lower 11s reflects that too. Do you know, I'm going to have to take us up to the 8 o'clock news, so you can hang up your microphones for a moment or two, if that's all right with you. You know, they say it flies when you're having fun, and this hour has flown by. Great to hear from Nav Saeed, and lots of optimism there in spite of Merstham's rather sticky start up in the Surrey Championship for the first time ever. And there'll be lots more from Chris Jacobs in his one appearance on the show this year before he jets off to the US of A. Now, the results in the first hour rather overran their allotted time, so what we're going to do is to run our news and weather at the top of the hour, and then just muse a little bit about what's occurring between 8 and 9. Then we'll have a track that's much played at T20 fixtures, and after that I'll finish off the local results from last weekend. And when we've done all that, it'll be back to our discussions. You're with Susie, 103.4. Thanks to Tim for the weather. You're back with On the Front Foot, the brand new title for the same old cricket show here on Susie 103.4. We'll be doing 4 or 5 of these through the season, along with the results that we run in the afternoon stroll on a weekly basis. And if you would like your reports and results on air with Susie 103.4 for Redhill, Reigate, Hawley and Crawley, don't be afraid to ping me an email. It's david.jjay@susyradio.com, S-U-S-Y radio, all one word. OK, well, as I said, we're going to have a well-worn cricketing track in a moment, and then we'll finish off last weekend's cricket results. And after that, it's back to the discussions. And I think we'll be turning our attention to the international and county games, and also one or two bits and bobs from the wider cricket field. And we've also got Tim Bowling's cricket news for you. We'll do that straight after the results. Right. Have you ever been dismissed and had this echo in your ears? Susie. OK, let's complete our leftover results. Newdigate Sunday Firsts completed their weekend with a win in the League Cup away to Woodmansterne, who batted first and were all out for 122. After a difficult start, Newdigate were 45 for 5 before some sensible batting by Ruki Wickramasinghe, 39 not out, and Steve Cale, 32 not out, brought the win in 31 overs. Merstham Firsts came up 24 runs short, chasing league leaders Hazelmere's 144 in Surrey Championship Div 5, despite the efforts of Noman Javed with bat and ball. Javed's figures of 3 for 23 backed up Glenn Mullins' 5 for 27. Merstham lost both openers early, and Javed's 50 was the only real flourish in a total of 120. At Quality Street in 2nd 11 Div 4, the twos reduced Kingstonian to 24 for 5, but the visitors recovered to 133. Merstham were promptly reduced to 13 for 6 and were dismissed for 93. The third team restricted Old Emmanuel to a paltry 99, James Lowe taking 4 for 31, but were themselves reduced to 32 for 8 and were bowled out for 58. A patient 55, his first 50 in senior cricket from Hamza Ali, put the fourth team in with a chance of defeating Oxted and Limpsfield's fives, but Andy Thompson, 6 for 34, kept Merstham to 148. David Andrews, 70, was instrumental in a 3 wickets win for O&L. And finally, Reigate Priory racked up 300 for 6, which proved too much for Guildford in the Premiership. Guildford were bowled out for 209, and Priory now share top spot with Normandy on 87 points. Last year's winners Sunbury have lost 3 times, including that nail-biter against the Priory. On Sunday, the Llamas beat arch-rivals Weybridge in the Cup in a tie not without a talking point, right at the final over. Chris, you must have your say about the Champions Trophy.
Where do you want me to start, to be fair? I've got loads of stuff to go.
Who do you think is going to win?
I've got to think the bottle jobs will sort themselves out. I think South Africa.
Really?
I think the South Africans, I don't know why, it's just they've got an absolutely packed batting unit. Yeah. Maybe they're not as so informed, but their bowling attack, although Dale Steyn isn't there, you've got the likes of Rabada, Imran Tahir, who's just spinning everyone. IPL, international cricket, he seems to always turn up. And with Rabada, he's, 21 years old? And he just brings that extra bit of pace and nip that can disturb these opening batsmen.
The problem is, I think, you hit the nail on the head at the very
bottle
first sentence.
Jobs.
Yeah, will they actually be able to get over the line? That's the problem. How many times have we seen South Africa in a position where you think, oh, this side's going to go all the way, and they just can't get over the line?
Even the last World Cup in the semi-final.
Yeah. There's
and Grant Elliott batted for 86 or something.
Yeah. It just seems to be something there that now that it's almost a sort of mental block for them that they can't get over that line.
I still think though many of those players that have had that mental block, they've been kind of flushed out the side. They've kind of got to that stage. So you've got maybe Amla and de Villiers are probably the only ones that still have that in their heads. You've got de Kock, who it is very surprising. You always go on about the top four players in the world, Smith, Root, Williamson and Coley.
Yeah.
De Kock's going to be up there soon.
Yeah. Maybe, he's a great player.
I think the only reason why he's not up there is because these blokes are all about 26. De Kock's only 24, so he's still got a lot of learning to do. And earlier in his test career, he really struggled against the short ball.
Yeah.
He really struggled.
I have to say, if you look at Quentin de Kock amongst the men, he looks a little bit like your 3-foot-11-year-old, even now.
But he very much does, yeah.
But he hits a long ball,
as we
have to say, in modern cricket. So, okay, so one South Africa, one India and one England, and I'm not going to exercise my chairman's casting vote just yet. Let's turn to something that we touched on earlier, and this whole business of the continuity or otherwise of England's selection and what we all feel about Johnny Bairstow.
Well, I don't know about you, Chris, but I mean, I think he was pretty hard done by not getting in the side.
Who do you drop?
Yeah, well, this is the problem. I mean, I think at the moment, obviously, it would be very easy to drop Roy. We talked about this earlier on in the show. It would be an easy drop, and it would have been something that, as Nav mentioned earlier, that the selectors of the 90s and noughties would have happily done.
Yeah.
They'd have chopped and changed the side. Where do you fit Bairstow in? You're right. I mean, naturally, I guess he would go in at the top of the order. But if Roy's to stay, where else would he fit in?
I think with this, I've conversations with this, David, quite a lot. With Bairstow, yes, he has opened for Yorkshire. He has got stacks of runs for Yorkshire at the top of the order. But you've got to think he's facing county bowlers. He's then going to come up to that next level. Yes, he's got runs in the middle order for England. Mm. But you've got to think, he's going to come up against the likes of Mitchell Starc when he's fresh, Rabada when he's fresh.
But do you not think Bairstow's capable of dealing with
those? I think he is. But I feel this tournament, Roy has until the end of this tournament because originally I said after the New Zealand game, if he doesn't get a good score, he'll be out. But then you've got to think, there's only two more games, meaningful games, in this tournament left, the semi-final and the final.
Yeah.
And if you chop and change now, that means Bairstow, although he's got runs, he could come up and get nipped in quite easily, two low scores, just like Roy, and you're in the same predicament.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's it. I mean, the old adage is you don't change your winning team, and the rest of the team are performing. So Roy is probably under less of a threat.
Yeah.
The fact that we've qualified easily. It'd be interesting to see which team they select against Australia, because presumably he should be in that side to try and actually get some confidence in a game which is a dead rubber game for England, not for Australia. But if he can get some runs against Australia, then hopefully he might be on.
Okay, chaps, then riddle me this. First game of the Champions Trophy, Owen Morgan on record as saying, "We shall not change the side."
Oh, you've
said
this before,
and they promptly dropped the leg spinner at the Oval. What do you say to that?
Wrong.
Yeah, well, I have to say I'm not a big fan of Owen Morgan as captain anyway. I don't understand why we don't have Joe Root as captain. I think Joe Root is capable of becoming the greatest England player, well, certainly the greatest England batsman of all time. I appreciate it was different when Alistair Cook was in charge.
That's
of
what
the
I was going to say, because you appreciate that Root, they don't want to do the same thing that they did with Cook with Root, because there's so much pressure on both the ODI side and the test captaincy.
Yeah,
but with Root, he's a totally different kettle of fish.
Exactly. And the thing was with Cook, he wasn't really a one-day player or a T20 player.
Although this year he is. He's racking him up for
now,
Essex.
There's no pressure on him now. But as someone like Root has proven that he can perform at every level, test cricket, one day, T20. I'm not a fan of Owen Morgan's as a captain. And I don't understand why he makes comments like that, then does the exact opposite of what he's going to do.
That is very true. That is very true.
It's interesting to me that we've got three generations sitting at these three microphones tonight, approximately 20 years between each of the three of us. And I suppose there is an element in my older generation that still has slight reservations about the cricketing mercenary. And maybe that's why I've got one or two qualms about Owen Morgan. Let me say straight out, hats off, or at least if I were wearing my hats off to Virat Kohli. Because with that tremendous load of one-day cricket and the IPL to play all those test matches for India as well and succeed across the formats, well done, Virat Kohli. I'll tell you something else while I've got the microphone. I happened to catch in a rain break the other afternoon Peterson's breakthrough 50-over innings against the Australians in 2005 before any of the Ashes happened.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it was a time in my life when I didn't really get the chance to watch very much cricket for all sorts of reasons, and I'd never really watched that innings before, and my goodness me, at that stage of his career, wasn't Kevin Peterson not just unorthodox but a superb player?
Oh, he was so far ahead of his time back then. I mean, we forget now, when you see the sorts of shots that players are playing now and the ramp shots and the scoops and everything, Peterson was playing those sort of shots, switch hitting and stuff, back sort of 12 years ago.
Oh yeah,
when he first came on the scene.
Yeah.
You know, I think we forget what a great player he was. He could have been one of the all-time greats.
He didn't become that, largely,
maybe because of his personality, let's say. But you're right, back in 2005, I mean, I was at the Oval Test when he scored the century, and it was just phenomenal. I mean, it really was phenomenal.
It was the first time I'd seen that. He'd switch-hit Scott Styris against New Zealand in about 2007, 2009, over, switch-hitting it, so it would be mid-wicket, but cover for everyone else for six.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of Kevin Peterson in Jason Roy, because of the way he picks, plays so dominantly straight, plays the pull shot quite comfortably. The cut shot isn't... Woods, both of them, they don't really like it, but the way how he shimmies down the pitch to chip over mid-on, the back foot comes up, it's very a lot alike. But the thing with... I heard Kumar Sangakkara saying this earlier. Roy is overcomplicating stuff. You see, in the first game, he's tried to ramp it over short, fine leg. Although, to be fair, it was a very good catch.
It was a good catch, but the fielder was there.
Today is the one that got me. Second ball in the over, he shimmied across, Adam Milne, he's bowled it out there, and he's drilled it straight back. He's then taken a single, Hales has put him back on strike. So you're thinking, 37 without loss, pretty good start, so he's just trying to build innings. But now, he tries to do that exact same thing. Milne has seen him go, puts it onto his pads, and he's trying to flick it round the corner. You've exposed middle out. can leg stump there.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that you make the comparison between the two players, because, of course, there's a South African element in Jason Roy's background too, which perhaps leads us quite neatly to the prospects for the up-and-coming South African Test Series, and that will lead us in turn to quite a lot of things that we need to say about West Indies cricket at the moment. So let's have a couple of songs and an ad break, shall we?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I don't know whether there's going to be any Oh Jimmy Jimmy this summer or not. It seems a long time ago now that they were singing that, and Lanky Lanky is way back in the 1970s. Let's look ahead, guys, to this forthcoming South African series, although, Tim, as you pointed out, we've got T20s first.
Yeah, we have got T20s. Strange, we were talking about this just earlier on with Chris, how the sort of schedule is a bit sort of odd this year, how I don't quite understand sometimes where the schedulers decide to put certain T20s and tests and stuff in as they do, but there we go. As you say, with the tests against South Africa coming up, as you mentioned Jimmy Anderson, he is obviously a major doubt for the first test. I think he's got a tear in his right groin or something. Well, I think that's going to make a big difference to the England side. I mean, he's been such a crucial part of the England bowling attack for so long now. I can't remember. It seems so long since he was an actual regular, before he was a regular in the team, that he is crucial to the England side. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of plays out. What are your thoughts, Chris, on this sort of Test series coming up with South Africa? Do you think we've got good chances? I know you've tipped South Africa to win the Champions Trophy.
They're a different kettle of fish, Test cricket. Mm. They're a different kettle of fish, straight up. Who opens for them? Is it Dean Elgar? Because I don't know half the team that are either on Colpack and who actually plays anymore. Because you've got, Riley Russo at Hampshire? But you've got Dean Elgar. I think he's playing for Somerset at the moment. But he opens up with Stephen Cook. They're both technically good players. And you've got Amla coming in at three. So they are a force. But I think their bowling attack is better than their batsmen.
They're weak in the spin department.
They are, in terms of the longer form of the game.
Yeah.
Because they haven't got Tahir, because he doesn't play that longer form of the game anymore. I think, do you have, what is Maharaj? I think that's a new spinner that they've got up and coming. And he hasn't really proven himself. But I think in terms of the England side, you've got to look as in, the side is pretty settled, but you still need to find that spinner. And in terms of replacing Anderson, who's not going to be in there, I'd go Jake Ball straight in, because he has really impressed me. Although originally I was like, why are we giving this guy a go? Even in the ODI cricket, the spell he bowled today to the likes of Williamson and Ross Taylor, quality. He's a quality bowler.
With the seamers, it's almost a matter, if Anderson doesn't play, of perming one from six or seven, isn't it? They do at least have choice, I think, in the seam bowling department. As for the spinners, well, who knows? What about these up-and-coming young test batsmen? What do we think about Haseeb Hameed and the South African boy from Durham? And, of course, Liam Livingstone at Lancashire.
Ben Foulkes at Surrey. Top-notch batsman, very reliable, but he's also very good with the gloves. I could see him being England test keeper very soon, because I think Bairstow, your glove work's not coming, it's coming on pretty nicely, but I still think you need a specialist keeper that can bat also, and Foulkes is that, and he's in the Lions squad already.
Do you think he would get ahead of Butler though?
Butler can't play spin in test cricket. Mm. He struggles against the red ball, and if you look over the last maybe 18 months, 2 years, how much red ball cricket has Joss Butler played? Very little. And you've got Ben Foulkes, who plays consistently well for Surrey, playing red ball and white ball cricket. So eventually it could get to the chance. Well, he's not old, Ben Foulkes, maybe 23-ish.
It's certainly an area where England now are thriving in terms of the wicketkeeper batsmen. You look at there's a long list of those players sort of pushing to get in the side. You know, Sam Billings, you know, you've got Bairstow, you've got Butler. There's plenty of players there that are pushing to get into that position, which is good for England.
And poor old Duckett did rather duck it in Bangladesh and India.
Got
found out a little
bit. It's never the right call.
But again, there's cabs on the rank, aren't there? I'm fascinated by this lineup of wicketkeeper batsmen. And I know you wouldn't go back in time, but Stephen Davis, for goodness sake,
is
still
a
pretty competent keeper batsman.
Well, is he moved to Gloucestershire?
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of Surrey and speaking of England and newcomers, what does anybody make of the retirement from the pro game of Zafar Ansari?
Very, very odd decision. I mean, it's given that he made his England debut against Bangladesh in October, it's a strange one that he's all of a sudden thrown it in. I think when you read about how his sort of demeanour and the sort of guy he was, He clearly had aspirations to do other things. I think he had he's got a degree from a double first, yeah. I think, from Cambridge. He's got a master's degree from Royal Holloway. He's obviously gone into or wants to now move into the sort of legal profession. And I think it was Chris Tremlett was saying that in the dressing room, Ansari would sit there, instead of joining in with the sort of banter and stuff, which isn't everybody's cup of tea, he'd be sitting in the corner reading his books all the time, trying to better himself. And I think it's quite a sad loss for cricket.
Very much so, yeah.
Somebody like that is sort of has that much talent. Right, he wasn't perhaps going to be the greatest ever England batsman, but he clearly had enough talent to get into the England team. To actually call it quits and wanted to go into another profession altogether, I think it's rather sad.
Yeah. Tim, there was somebody else a little while ago who had a Cambridge degree and wasn't England's greatest ever batsman, but nobody ever questioned Michael Brearley's place in the side.
No, that's very true, very true. I mean, he was arguably the greatest ever England captain.
That's the difference, though.
Yeah.
Brearley was a very good county player, but he was another level of captain. Yeah. That's the difference.
I think he was fortunate that he was in an era where he was able to be a great captain, whereas in this day and age, teams just wouldn't carry somebody as a captain unless he was performing.
It's because of the professional era. With Brearley, it wasn't a professional game. Now you've got to focus on one thing and one thing only.
Yeah. My friend Ed Wesson, who ran the cricket at Hampton School, where Zaf was at school, spoke very, very well of him. Ed came on to Reigate as deputy head, and he's now head at Skinner's in Tunbridge. I think amongst all the cricketers that we saw on the circuit, and Ed and I must have seen an awful lot of cricketers over the years that we were colleagues, I never heard anyone speak better than Ed spoke of Zafar Ansari as a cricketer. No doubt he was a huge success at that level. Prospects then for the South African series. We've talked a little bit about individual players. What about the series outcome, do we think?
What do you think, Chris?
How many tests is it for?
Yeah, I think it's four tests.
Four.
And then we're playing the it's West Indies, isn't it? So
I think we'll nick it 2-1. I think we'll definitely draw at least one, but I think we'll nick it 2-1 just because of, in terms of the batting lineup, I still think we've just got enough in that department just to knock the runs up, put the pressure under their batsmen and let our bowlers just do their job. Apart from that one role as a spinner, the paces will put them under a lot of pressure.
No, I have to agree with Chris. I think England will nick it. I think it might be 2-0 or 2-1. But I think England are going to do it.
Yeah, I think South Africa might get found out over here. My principal concern about the entire thing is that it's costing me £200 for two seats in the grandstand on the first day of the Lord's Test, and that is
that
a lot of money.
That does not surprise me one bit.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's the going rate.
Exactly.
But even so, it's starting to be an awful lot of money, particularly when you're trying to attract people to the game. But, of course, you can fill the Oval and you can fill Lord's. It's the Test match outgrounds where the problems come.
I think the thing is I always think with cricket tickets, you're right, £100 is, you know, it can be an expensive amount for a ticket. But when you look at, for example, a football ticket, if you go and see a Premier League football game, you can pay, say, £60 for a game that lasts 90 minutes. The advantage, obviously, with cricket is you are getting a full day, which isn't much consolation when it's coming straight out of your bank account, but I think for value for money, it's still much more value for money than watching a football game.
I still think it's too expensive. Every sport should cap tickets at £40. £40 straight up, because then you're losing all the fans of the game. Football, you see, like, many of these teams, the likes of Man City and Arsenal towards the end of the seasons with empty stadiums. You see, like, the problem is you've got a test match a lot of the time up at Durham in the middle of May with rain and clouds and an empty stadium, because that's going
to
happen.
Again, that's down to the schedulers. You look at how many games in Cardiff are scheduled at the start of the season that get washed out. It's ridiculous. But I mean, I think, David, what you mentioned earlier, the fact that you can fill out the Oval and Lords, and the point is, whilst you can still sell out grounds,
maybe
they're going to charge
Edgbaston at a push.
Yeah, yeah. Then maybe these outlying grounds outside of London, let's say, shouldn't be charging quite as much. But all the time people are paying that money, they will continue to actually charge it. And don't forget as well, there isn't the amount of money in cricket that there is in sports like football. So they still have to try, and I'm not condoning it because, you know, I don't like paying that amount either, but they still have to try and bring in funds to the game.
But is it all going to come from people coming through the gate, because you think all those people, if you cap it at £40, you're going to fill out grounds. Then you've got people that are going to buy stuff in the shops, you've got people that are going to buy stuff in the conveniences like the beer and everything, that they charge £6 a pint anyway. And £5 for a bacon baguette at the
Oval. But I'm just from the point of view of the organisers, I guess they would argue that it is a full day. I think it's different with T20s and stuff. Then you're charging less for those because it's an evening, whatever. But if you're there at Lord's all day, I mean, I think £100 is a bit over the top. But I think if you were paying £60 or £70 for a cricket ticket, I think you're getting good value for
money. If you still cap it, though, the amount of money you're still going to rein in from television deals, sponsorship deals, that's still going to keep the money pretty high. And because you'll get more of those deals around the world, because you see these fans pack out stadiums like they do in India. Why do you think the IPL gets so many contract deals? Mm. Because they fill out the stadiums and... Yeah, they might be pretty expensive, but that's because of the craze in India of cricket. It's their main sport. It's like football over here. That's why people would pay above odds for football.
Okay, we'll put it this way. Which would you rather have? Would you rather have expensive tickets to the test matches and a terrestrial channel paying less for a cricket deal to show cricket all summer on terrestrial TV, or have lower cricket prices at the grounds, but Sky get the or a satellite company gets the rights and they're pumping more money into the game? That's the trade-off you've got between the two.
That's true. I still think I'd go for the cheaper tickets, because I think still people prefer, because at the moment you're paying high ticket prices plus you're paying the subscriptions. So if you lower the ticket prices, people are still going to pay the subscriptions.
No, I just think I agree with you on that. I just think it's a shame that we're losing TV coverage completely across the board.
That's true.
You know, we're going to touch on the Women's World Cup, and that's previously has been shown on terrestrial TV. The Women's World Cup's going to be shown on Sky as well. So again, there's another part of the game which is, I mean, lots of people have Sky now, but not everybody can afford to have Sky Sports
that's true.
And so on.
That's true.
And again, it puts it out of viewing for lots of people. Yeah, they don't get to see
exactly.
The game.
What makes it even worse is, though, all people, they might have Sky now, they've got subscription packages, but the Ashes is now being shown on BT Sport at the end of this year.
Well, that's it,
So you've got to pay for extra channels.
So it's
getting unreal the amount of money people have to shell out for these games.
I think Tim is quite rightly identifying that it's bound to go with market forces. Market forces dictate the profit margins, and it's as simple as that. But there is, we were talking earlier on, weren't we, about the generations here in the studio, and I think one aspect of current generation gaps is disposable income, and Chris has got a point. Not everybody who's starting out in life can afford to slap a couple of hundred notes on the ticket office desk and say, I'll come to Lord's on Thursday, thank you very much. Okay, well, we need to talk about women's cricket, and we need to talk about West Indies, most certainly, because there's a little local element, of course, to do with West Indies now. But before we do that, let's have our last song, and I think it's fair enough to refer to this little triumvirate as the Boys of Summer, don't you?
Indeed.
Definitely.
So there's been lots of talk and not all that much space for music tonight, and this is our last track because we've got lots more to talk about up to the top of the hour. This is an end of summer song, of course, but it is also all about Chris and Tim and me in the studio tonight. We hope we are the Boys of Summer on Susie. Don Henley, we're on the front foot on Susie 103.4 with our first cricket chat show of the year. Tim Bowling, Chris Jacobs alongside me. I nearly said Chris Jordan, but I didn't quite.
What a player.
Well, a indeed, player. Yes. You wouldn't mind, really, would you? So, chaps, we've got a Champions Trophy going on while West Indies play T20s in the Caribbean against Afghanistan. What is going on?
I think it's one of the saddest indictments of cricket at the moment, the fact that the West Indies are not in a Champions Trophy. I think there should have been... There should have been a way of trying to get them involved, even if you know the cricket authorities extend the amount of teams in the Champions Trophy to 10 to make sure that all Test playing nations are there. You know, you've got the West Indies winning the T20 2016, wasn't it? They won the T20, beat England by 4 wickets in the final. And I remember when they were interviewing, I can't remember who it was I interviewed straight after the game. One of the West Indies players was talking about the fact that the West Indies board had had no interest in backing them. They'd had to pay for their own kit. They hadn't had any caps.
It was Darren Sammy.
Oh, is it Sammy?
It was
Darren Sammy,
Sammy. Yes,
actually
Darren Sammy.
Gave them both
yeah.
barrels.
And actually,
on
the, do you know the funny thing was, having lost that game as an England fan, and I was you know, gutted that we'd lost, after I heard him talking, Sammy talking in that interview, I actually was in many ways quite pleased that they'd won, because they deserve it for the shoddy way that the West Indies cricket is actually run, has been run until recently.
And the problem, I suppose, is now that even if they were at the Champions Trophy, not one of their top 11 50-over players would be representing West Indies anyway.
It's baffling how they've allowed the situation to degenerate in the West Indies.
Yeah, I'll have a harsh look at this. West Indies, no, they do not deserve to be in the tournament.
But not sooner, even as a test-playing nation.
Yeah, but you could say that very soon about Ireland. Ireland are soon going to be
point.
A test-playing nation. So do they deserve automatic inclusion in the Champions Trophy just because they're a test-playing nation? West Indies, they did it when Gale, Bravo, Samuels, Ramdin, where they were all young in their early 20s. What they did, they scrapped all the old-school side and said, we're going to go with you youngsters, we will build through you guys. It seems like they're just going to have to do that again. And I think what that means is you're going to have to scrap from top to bottom. You can't have Gale coming back. You can't have... Samuels is still playing throughout, which is fair enough. But you can't have the likes of Bravo coming back. They can do all their mercenary T20 stuff at the moment. They shouldn't be allowed to come back and play West Indies cricket unless you play all three formats.
The problem with the West Indies in recent times has been the fact that in the old days... everybody wanted to play for the West Indies.
Yeah.
They were the number one side. Everybody wanted to play. Then they started to get influenced by baseball, basketball, and a lot of the West Indians are looking to the States as their sporting icons rather than the cricketers. The problem is going to be the actual idea you've got is a good idea, but by scrapping that and not allowing these big names back, will people just lose interest completely? Because people are starting to lose interest over there in playing cricket and watching cricket. And if you don't have some draw to bring these people in to watch and play, West Indies cricket could just completely dissolve. You're right about the fact you've got teams like Ireland and stuff coming through. But, I mean, maybe, you know, I remember when I was a kid, the West Indies were the team to beat.
Yeah.
And England hadn't beaten them for years and years. And I remember when we beat them in 1990 at Sabina Park. And it was a big thing that we actually beat them in one test match, because we hadn't beaten them for years. And it just seems so long ago now. And for the West Indies not to qualify for the Champions Trophy, I think Pakistan just about qualified. When we were talking about with Nav earlier on, they only just qualified themselves. You know, and you could potentially have had a tournament where no Pakistan and no West Indies.
I think, yeah, partially, I think a lot of people would have hoped that Bangladesh didn't qualify.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would think that just because they're set in their ways of those usual teams coming together, because the size and the entertainment West Indies bring.
It's like having the Football World Cup with no Brazil. For me, I know that they're not, the West Indies are not ranked up there, and that's why they've not qualified, but just not having them in that tournament, I think the tournament loses something.
I'm coming at this in a way from the older generation's perspective again, I suppose. Tim rightly identifies that when he was younger, he's still young of course, but when he was younger, the West Indies were in their absolute pomp. The fact is that within my lifetime, you've gone from the West Indies captain having to be an amateur white man. It's only when Frank Worrell became captain in 1963 or whenever, 1961 was it, that wonderful Tide series against the Australians, and then he brought the West Indies here, that you had an indigenous captain. And there is no doubt as well that there were tremendous inter-island rivalries, which successively Frank Worrell, Gary Sobers, Clive Lloyd and Viv Richards dispelled and turned the West Indies into a one-for-all, all-for-one unit. Now, once the Leeward Islands and the Windward Islands split off into their component parts and everybody wants a piece of the pie, it's perhaps not surprising that West Indies are divided loyalties again. I think, in terms of what Chris says, there are implications, are there not? It's all very well saying West Indies shouldn't bring their IPL players back, but you're saying that at the very moment that England are starting to send players off to the IPL.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to start talking in terms of blanket bans on mercenaries, you're on a very slippery slope. My last point on this would be that I agree with Tim absolutely. I felt that in the years of their doldrums, World Rugby needed Wales, and I believe that World Cricket needs West Indies now.
Yeah, I mean, well, the West Indies have recently appointed Johnny Grave as its new chief executive. Now, one of the things he's been tasked with is top priorities. Obviously, he's been told he's got to improve performances on and off the field. I think that goes without saying. He's overseeing a $40 million budget, but he's been told he's got to increase focus on player relations. And I think it's quite significant that they've brought this guy in who has been working for the Professional Cricketers Association to try and almost professionalise it. You'd never think you'd say that about the West Indies cricket, but looking at the shambles it's been in recent years, you can see why they've done it. This guy's going to come in. He's got a proven track record of success in his career and all the other stuff that goes with it. He's going to be based in Antigua. You know, the West Indies have suffered so much in recent years from Stamford, you know, that debacle. They need someone like this guy. Hopefully this guy will galvanise them and will try to actually push them back to where they should be.
Tim, you sell us all a weeny bit short, because of course Johnny Grave's successful career stems from his seat of education, which is exactly the same as yours and the one that I worked at for all those years.
I didn't know that.
Johnny Grave was a pupil of mine. He lived in Ray Lane. His younger brother was actually the better cricketer. Johnny played a bit of second team cricket, but it was Andy who was the successful first team seamer, a little bit younger. Yeah, I got to know John quite well, and I'm hopeful, I've exchanged emails, I'm hopeful that if he can find a window in the West Indies itinerary, he might just find time to pop down to Reigate to see his folks and pop in here to see us.
Well, that would be great if we could get him on the show. I didn't realise he was at our old alma mater.
Oh, absolutely so. John's an old Reigation through and through.
Okay. That's good. There we go. Well, he's going to be a success then.
Well, let's hope so, at least. Perhaps he learned some of his management skills at my left knee, or maybe other low places or low joints. We'll see what's what. We're running towards the end of this first show, gentlemen, and I know that maybe neither of you are experts in the field, but we do have a Women's World Cup coming up.
Yeah, well, that, as we were talking about that earlier on, it's going to be shown on Sky Sports, which I guess as much as we were sort of debating the rights and wrongs of terrestrial v satellite coverage, at least proves that Sky are pushing to promote the women's game, put money into the women's game, and try and grow it. So it's it's good news, I guess, for all sort of female cricketers, in the fact that the profile is being raised by Sky.
Australia, of course, grasped the nettle in the way that we never do and founded a women's Big Bash, which was a huge success.
Oh, yeah,
along
massive.
The lines not just of the Big Bash but of the IPL in terms of cross-fertilisation among players, and clearly, you know, their top players, Alyssa Healy and Elise Perry and Meg Lanning, are faces in Oz. They are serious public figures down under, and it's interesting, I think, that now you start to focus on Susie Bates from New Zealand and Stephanie Taylor from the West Indies, and you start to have a sense of our young ladies who play cricket for England as well.
It's not going to be long before we're catching up with that, and they're going to be a sort of household names. I mean, you look at a lot of these sort of female athletes who are performing in many of the sports at the Olympics. It doesn't take long for them to become household names and people to recognise who they are, and that can only be a good thing for cricketers if, you know, girls are playing cricket more and coming through the clubs. So hopefully it will help with that.
Claire Connor is, of course, an old Brightonian, and Claire is now in charge of the ECB women's cricket. And I should probably add to that that it's a couple of years back now when I was umpiring a first-team game between Reigate and Brighton College at Brighton, and it's the first time in all my days in a first-team game that I was at square leg with a young lady slow left-armer bowling to a young lady batsman.
Yeah.
And that's Brighton College. And that was the day that I met Sarah Taylor. And I'm very, very pleased that Sarah is finding her way back into the fold.
Yes, it's good. No, I think it's good news. It's all pointing towards good things for the England ladies cricket team. So that's good.
I think that this whole business of depression in sport, I mean, obviously very high profile at the moment from Prince William and Prince Harry downwards, but it's something that maybe was swept under the carpet in olden days and more of the stiff upper lip. There have been cricketing suicides, have there not, throughout the entire history of the game?
I mean, it's tough for cricketers because, unlike footballers, the essence of a cricket tour where players can be away from home for months on end. I mean, it's much easier to communicate now with, you know, different technologies, but you're still away from home, and some players take it better than others. And as we've seen in recent years, the likes of Jonathan Trott have suffered, Mark Trescothick, they've all suffered from mental health issues, which you're quite right, were swept under the carpet. And fortunately now, it's there's much more publicity about it, which can hopefully help those that are suffering, so that they don't need to go through the same problems that, that the likes of Trescothick and Trott and others like them have been through.
The worrying thing is that Trott was only in 2014.
Yeah.
That's the worrying thing. Mm. Although it's only, they have picked it up, it's still not all there. There's still a massive stigma, because you've got to think, with Jonathan Trott, he was absolutely caned by many England supporters, saying, why has he just dropped out in the middle of a series?
But I think,
and that was in 2014. We're only 3 years on, and we're only just started to getting this and stopped pushing it under the rug.
But I think that's a general indictment of people's attitudes towards mental health issues generally, not just in cricket. I think that's, you know, as we as you say, with the sort of William and Harry talking about it now, and professional players admitting to it, and it's being addressed more now, it will hopefully start to be much more accepted as an illness, not just something that, you know, well, you just need to just deal with it and get on with it, which is clearly not something that many people can do.
No.
Performance is an issue so bound with personal circumstances and personal mental health, and I suppose that applies whether you're coming into a studio and sitting behind a microphone or going on stage or walking into the sports arena, or dare I say it, even teaching a class of children.
Yeah.
Anything and everything that's going on in the background needs at least to be taken into account. So, again, hats off. Were I wearing my hat, certainly to the Duke of Cambridge and Prince Harry for their moves in this direction. Gentlemen, we have about 75 seconds before it's time to press the button on the out theme, and that's almost it for On the Front Foot in this first edition. Any final thoughts?
Well, it's been good to have Chris in.
Thank you very much for letting me join in with you guys. It has been very good.
No, it's been good to have your thoughts on various issues, and we've had a good discussion. So hopefully we'll have a few more good guests in for some of the rest of the shows this season.
Well, we'll have a little bit more notice next time, Tim, to be able to assemble our team of guests. Yes. And I think the way that we've organised things tonight, rather than trying to have a big roundtable discussion, has probably worked quite well, because we've actually got more discussion and less music in. And
There's plenty more to come as well. We've got lots of other stuff to discuss as well.
Apart from the musos out there, I imagine that the serious cricket listeners, and we did get one or two plaudits, not least about the podcast, as they call it, the replays on the website.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning, the fact that it's going to be on the website again to listen. So, you know, if people have missed it or want to listen again and have another hear of what we were saying, then it will be on the website.
Tim, we'll see you next time. Chris, I'll see you on Thursday. But before your next cricket show, enjoy your trip to America.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on, guys.
We wish you well with that, and thanks for coming, both of you. You've been listening to On the Front Foot. Because we've given the title of Suzy Radio's Cricket Chat Show for this season of 2017 to the batsmen as opposed to last year's bowlers. We'll be doing round about one of these a month, perhaps one or two more if circumstances permit. And if you'd like to get involved, please don't hesitate, whether it's results and reports on a regular basis or to express an interest in coming on the show. You can always email me. It's david.jay@suzyradio.com, and the website is very simply suzyradio.com. The album show with Jerry Wright is coming up next on Suzy 103.4. And I think Big Al French is opening the box of breakfast delights for you tomorrow morning here on Suzy Radio, real local radio for Redhill, Reigate, Hawley and Crawley. And from me, David J, it's a very good evening.